It's a milestone, but it's still not enough. I'm Pam Puso, Fox News. 300 million doses of the coronavirus vaccine have been administered in the U.S. over the last 150 days, but the Biden administration could still fall short of its goal of getting 70% of adults at least partially vaccinated by July 4th. The president is also warning Americans about a virus variant first detected in India.
The new variant will leave unvaccinated people even more vulnerable than they are a month ago. This is a serious concern.
The Delta variant is spreading in states with low vaccination rates. She now has a name. Tropical Storm Claudette is dumping rain on coastal Louisiana, Mississippi, and Alabama. Forecasters with the National Hurricane Center say the storm is expected to weaken as it moves farther inland. 5 to 10 inches of rain are expected. Michael Middleton with Mississippi Power says extra crews have been called in.
They've been through ice storms, tornadoes, hurricanes, and they're willing to sacrifice their Father's Day weekend to be able to respond to the needs of our customers.
The wet weather is threatening planned celebrations commemorating Juneteenth.
It marks the date when Union soldiers brought the news of freedom to enslaved black people in Galveston, Texas, some 2.5 years after President Abraham Lincoln's Emancipation Proclamation had freed slaves in southern states.
Fox says Tanya J. Powers, President Biden signed a bill this week making June 19th a federal holiday. The measure had widespread bipartisan support. A landslide victory in Iran's presidential race. Initial results give the win to a hardline candidate supported by the country's supreme leader. The contest was marred by low voter turnout and the disqualification of many candidates. America's listening to Fox News. The crash of a small plane has left 2 people dead. The FAA says the single-engine Cessna went down yesterday in the St. Mary's River along the state line between Florida and Georgia. The cause is under investigation. Emergency responders in North Carolina remain optimistic that 2 missing tubers will be found alive. On Wednesday, a group of 9 people went over a dam while floating down the Dan River on inflatable tubes. The bodies of 3 people were recovered. 4 other people were rescued.
People often raft or go tubing on the river, but exit when they start seeing signs for the dam. This group went over Wednesday night, but emergency crews weren't called until Thursday.
Fox says Eben Brown is believed all 9 people are part of the same family. They've been docked for well over a year, but next month, cruise ships are expected to set sail again from Florida after a federal judge sides with the state and not with the CDC.
A federal judge in Tampa said the CDC went too far with its interpretation of the Public Health Service Act and that the state of Florida is likely to succeed in litigation. He said as of July 18th, the CDC's sail order will become a recommendation or guidance for the cruise industry, and that the agency has until July 2nd to propose a narrower rule for cruise ships in light of the pandemic. After the judge's ruling, Florida Governor Ron DeSantis accused the CDC and Biden administration of trying to sink the cruise industry, hiding behind bureaucracy and delays, and he said that this court ruling is a victory for all states that want to preserve their rights in the face of unprecedented federal overreach. Jessica Rosenthal, Fox News.
As the Delta variant of the coronavirus spreads rapidly in Britain, Germany and France are calling on citizens to be vigilant. New infections in Germany are low at the moment, but Chancellor Angela Merkel is warning, "We can't pretend that corona is over." I'm Pam Puso, Fox News.
On the Maryland side of the Beltway, heads up in Prince George's County. On the outer loop, there is construction in Camp Springs between Branch Avenue and Allentown Road. No delays traveling between the two beltways in Prince George's County on the BW Parkway and on 95. Now, in the district, all lanes are clear on 295, 395, and 695. On the Virginia side of the beltway, no delays on the inner loop or on the outer loop. But on 66 eastbound, traffic is slow in Fairfax between 123 and the Vienna Metro Station. And now from GarageDoorRepair.com, the WMAL Storm Watch 7 forecast.
Partly cloudy, warm, and muggy today. We're expecting high temperatures back in the upper 80s under partly cloudy skies. We'll also have the possibility for some afternoon showers and storms. Some of them may be strong to severe, damaging winds, the primary threat. Later on tonight, some isolated storms possible, lows back around 70 degrees. For your Father's Day, partly cloudy skies, again the chance for some isolated afternoon storms. Keep the Stormwatch 7 app handy, otherwise hot and humid, highs around 90 degrees. I'm 7 News meteorologist Alex Lee at the Stormwatch 7 Weather Center.
Now, the Saturday morning update.
105.9 FM.
Good morning. It is the Saturday morning update. A happy Father's Day weekend. Happy Juneteenth. And also, it is the first weekend of summer as it officially begins tomorrow. I'm Rick Fowler. Good to have you along. Jeff Wolf is behind the console. Jane Houghton, our producer this morning. Some news from overnight in the Iranian elections. No big surprise here and no big change in Iran. Ibrahim Raisi, a hardline judiciary chief with a brutal human rights record, set to win the presidential election in Iran. That election not without controversy. The preliminary results have been announced already. Raisi is currently under U.S. sanctions. He has emerged as the front runner after an election supervisory body barred all of his serious rivals from the race. Real democracy going there. Analysts describe the vote as the country's most uncompetitive election since the establishment of the Islamic quote-unquote republic in 1979. With 90% of the ballots counted, voter turnout stood at about 48%, according to election officials. Far fewer voters turned out for this election, which was widely seen as a foregone conclusion. Fewer voters than in 2017. In that year, 70% showed up. This year, 48%. So, no great shakes in Iran this morning. How'd you do on the stock market yesterday? How about that market? The Fed was making some comments this week, and those comments from the Fed really shook investors. The market down over 500 points on Friday. And you may say, well, you know, what's going on here? Well, the Federal Reserve had made some comments in terms of repositioning the global financial markets. The investors reacted on Friday. You know, Wall Street is based on certainty. Wall Street does not like uncertainty. And that's what happens when you have mixed statements coming out of the Federal Reserve, and statements aren't really clear, and statements that could talk about the increasing inflation and what impact it may have. Now, there is a president of the Federal Reserve Bank in St. Louis, Jim Bullard. He made these comments on Friday morning, and the market tanked Friday afternoon.
The inflationary impulse, I think, is more intense than we were expecting.
There are some people who are looking for rate hikes in 2022. Where do you kind of come down?
I put us starting in late 2022.
All right, so they're talking about interest rate hikes, and Bullard wasn't finished there.
These are things far in the future in an environment where we've got a lot of volatility, so it's not at all clear that any of this will pan out the way anybody's talking about it. So we're going to have to go meeting by meeting and see what happens.
So there's a little more uncertainty thrown into the mix. Now, earlier in the week, the chairman of the Federal Reserve, Jerome Powell, made this comment.
If we saw signs that the path of inflation or longer-term inflation expectations were moving materially and persistently beyond levels consistent with our goal, we'd be prepared to adjust the stance of monetary policy.
Okay, so you've got interest rates and inflation, which are causing jitters among investors. We might as well get the Secretary of the Treasury, Janet Yellen, her comments as well.
What I'm supportive of is inflation in line with the Fed's targets and interest rates at slightly higher levels that would give the Fed the ability to use monetary policy to address weakness in the economy.
Monetary policy to address weakness in the economy means interest rates to address inflation. So we'll keep an eye on the market. I hope you've enjoyed the success with your 401k so far. The Biden administration screwing up yet one more element of American society, now the stock market. It is the Saturday morning update. It is 6:14, and we're going to talk about the Putin-Biden summit coming up next. But first, Al BD is in the WMAL Traffic Center.
Right now in D.C. on 295, 395, and 695. I'm not seeing any construction or any accidents in the traffic cameras, so you will be at the posted speed limit. Now into Virginia on the Beltway. That is clear on the inner loop and on the outer loop. on 66. Heads up in Fairfax. Traffic is slow on the eastbound side of 66 between 123 and the Vienna Metro Station. On 95 in Virginia, between the Beltway and Fredericksburg. On the northbound side, all lanes are at the posted speed limit. And on the southbound side, everything is clear. And now from GarageDoorRepair.com, the WMAL Stormwatch 7 forecast.
Partly cloudy, warm, and muggy today. We're expecting high temperatures back in the upper 80s under partly cloudy skies. We'll also have the possibility for some afternoon showers and storms. Some of them may be strong to severe, damaging winds, the primary threat. Later on tonight, some isolated storms possible, lows back around 70 degrees. For your Father's Day, partly cloudy skies. Again, the chance for some isolated afternoon storms. Keep the Stormwatch 7 app handy, otherwise hot and humid, highs around 90 degrees. I'm 7 News meteorologist Alex Lee at the Stormwatch 7 Weather Center.
73 degrees in the nation's capital, 6:15 on the Saturday morning update.
Washington's Mall, WMAL, where Washington comes to talk.
It is the Saturday morning update. Thank you for joining us. I'm Rick Fowler. Of course, the big summit this week between Vladimir Putin and President Biden, and that capped the president's trip. Not only the summit, but the G7 meeting to begin with, and then NATO meetings, and spending some time with the Queen in England. But it was the big summit with Vladimir Putin that everybody was talking about, and we're going to get into the details of it with John Gizzi a little bit later on this morning. Also with KT McFarland, we'll get her read on the summit and how's it playing out, and also Tony Schaefer will join us, and we'll look at sort of the military side of it and the cyber side of it, and it's kind of a consensus in what I've seen so far that there wasn't really much resolved in the summit. No major wins, no major losses, just kind of a draw, which I guess in the big picture, that's probably a good thing. But there was one kind of a back and forth on cybersecurity, and President Biden apparently giving a list to Vladimir Putin of 16 entities, the off-limits list when it comes to ransomware attacks. Here's what the president said.
I talked about the proposition that certain critical infrastructure should be off-limits to attack, period, by cyber or any other means. I gave them a list. If I'm not mistaken, I don't have it in front of me, 16 specific entities.
So you gave them a list of 16 specific entities. Well, what about all the other entities that aren't on the list? What are they, fair game? The idea would have been maybe to say, you don't do any ransomware attacks. But no, okay, stay off these 16. Just don't mess with these 16, and what are we going to do? Look the other way on anything else you do? Kind of a weird signal to send to somebody. It's okay to hit these guys, but just don't hit the 16 here. Vladimir Putin, of course, blames it all on us.
Most of the cyber attacks in the world are carried out from the cyber realm of the United States.
Well, what do we expect from Vladimir Putin? Now, one of the more interesting elements of the Putin summit was the aftermath with President Biden talking with the media. And CNN's Caitlin Collins asked him a question, and he got really torqued about it. Then he came back in the same volley with CNN and the other reporters, and the president said this about positive coverage and positive questions.
Look, to be a good reporter, you got to be negative. You got to have a negative view of life, okay? It seems to me the way you never ask a positive question.
This guy has been lobbed softballs from everybody in the media, with the exception of Peter Doocy at Fox. This guy's had a cakewalk since he's gotten in, and he's fussing about the media never asking positive questions. I mean, they serve him up on a silver platter to him, but he's got a problem with it. The former president, Donald J. Trump, endorsing Kelly Shibaka on Friday in a Senate race. Well, what's the big deal? Well, he endorsed her instead of the incumbent Senator Lisa Murkowski of Alaska. You may recall that Lisa Murkowski did vote for his impeachment. Trump said, quote, Lisa Murkowski is bad for Alaska. Murkowski has got to go. The words there of the former president, Donald Trump. He's teaming up with Bill O'Reilly for an appearance in Orlando, Florida. Tickets, I think, have just gone on sale. We're going to talk about that coming up later on with John Gizzi on the program. I think that's a very interesting combination. Now, somebody else we haven't heard too much from recently is Mike Pence, our former vice president. Well, he was at the Faith and Freedom Coalition meeting in Kissimmee, Florida yesterday. And here's his attitude about our current vice president and her response to the crisis at the border.
When I was vice president, I visited our southern border. And yes, it's past time for our current vice president to go to the border.
And that indeed is our former vice president, Mike Pence. And he's talking there, of course, about Kamala Harris. Now, the current status of the border is a mess. If you ask the Secretary of Homeland Security, Alejandro Mayorkas, he says it's all fine and dandy, but that's not exactly the way it's going at the border. There was a hearing. He was grilled by Representative Ralph Norman.
I'm reclaiming my time. You made the statement that my question was unfair. I'm making the statement that your comments are just words, and they're very unfair. I ask you a simple question, and I would like for you just to answer simply. Does it make sense for the leaders of the free world to go to talk to and see what's going on at the border?
I am the Secretary of Homeland Security, and it is my responsibility to manage the border at the direction of the president and the vice president, and I have visited the border on multiple occasions. The vice president served as the attorney general of a border state of California, and she is quite familiar with the situation on the border.
She's laughing at her.
Well, I kind of feel bad for Mayorkas because he's put in a position where Biden's not going to the border. Harris isn't going to have it as a backdrop in a photo op. So he's stuck. And all he has to do is come out and say the border's closed. And then they think he's done his job. He knows it's not true. We know it's not true. You know it's not true. But what else can he say? I mean, that's what he's got to do. A bad situation he's in. Well, Ron DeSantis, the governor of Florida, a lot of people looking at Governor DeSantis as a possible presidential candidate in 2024 on the Republican ticket. He's chiming in on the border.
And the thing that makes it so tragic is it's been avoidable. There was not a crisis January 20th on that border. Not that saying that everything was resolved, but I mean, it was the policies were working. And those were all thrown out, I think, more for political or ideological reasons. And the result has been what we've been dealing with now.
As we mentioned on the show last week, the Texas governor, Greg Abbott, did make his formal announcement this week that Texas is going to build a border wall if the feds won't do it. I imagine they'll get into some federal courts on that one. But Governor DeSantis is helping out as well. And he's in Florida. The problem's in Texas, but that doesn't stop the governor of Florida.
When we have emergency situations, states help each other out. We've gotten a lot of help over the years responding to hurricanes. This is a disaster, and it is an emergency for people like Texas and Arizona. They asked all governors to be able to send support. Florida's the first one to answer the call. We're going to have personnel from our state law enforcement agencies, and then we have a number of our sheriff's departments who raised their hand. Some of my sheriffs in North Florida, some of the rural counties, they say the number one problem is the methamphetamine, and it's almost all coming in from across the southern border. When they ask, we want to be good Americans, but we also think it is good for our state to get this under control. And if the federal government is unwilling or unable to act, then the states are just going to have to step up.
All right, want to turn to another topic that's a hot one, continues, and everybody's questioning, of course, the origin of the coronavirus. And emails have surfaced, and we've seen a lot of the video clips of Tony Fauci and others over the past year and kind of where the origins were. Was there a lab leak? Was there not a lab leak? Well, comedian Jon Stewart has chimed in on it, and he may make the most sense of any of them. And here's what he had to say about the origins of COVID-19.
There's a novel respiratory coronavirus overtaking Wuhan, China. What do we do? oh, you know who we could ask? The Wuhan novel respiratory coronavirus lab. The disease is the same name as the lab. So wait a minute, you work at the Wuhan respiratory coronavirus lab. How did this happen? And they're like, a pangolin kissed a turtle.
So some common sense from John Stewart. And it's always good to get a good dose of common sense from Governor Christie of New Jersey. Chris Christie, former governor. And it all starts with the school board in the Randolph Township in New Jersey. They voted to change Columbus Day to Indigenous Peoples Day. Well, some residents were outraged, a lot of Italian people in New Jersey. So the board said that instead it would wipe holiday names from the school calendar altogether while still observing the days off. So on the school calendar, instead of saying Christmas, it just says day off. Instead of saying Veterans Day or Memorial Day, it says just day off. Well, here's how the former governor of New Jersey reacted to that.
It's insane. Think about this. This all started because they wanted to rename Columbus Day Indigenous Persons Day. And people in their town objected to that. So what did they do? It's not keep it Columbus Day. Take the names off every holiday. Memorial Day, Veterans Day, Labor Day. It's absolutely absurd, Brian. But here's the good news. I tweeted out opposition to it. Lots of people in New Jersey have been doing the same. And so I now understand that they've scheduled an emergency meeting for Monday night to take a vote to rescind this stupid policy. I sent out a tweet the other day saying either they need to rescind the policy or they all need to resign. Holidays mean something. And we Memorial Day is named so that we do remember, not to forget. But this is what's going on in our woke society right now. And all of us need to stand up and speak out against this stuff because it's really awful for our kids.
That was Chris Christie speaking on the Fox News Channel. Chris Christie takes no prisoners. He's quite visible these days, and I wouldn't be surprised if we see him in that 2024 race. And, of course, it will all depend on what the former president, number 45, decides to do. It is 6:27. It's the Saturday Morning Update on WMAL. We'll be talking with Jennifer Harper coming up next. We've also got Jim Trusty coming up, our legal expert. We'll talk with John Gizzi. Lieutenant Colonel Tony Schaefer is on the way, and K.T. McFarland. So an action-packed Saturday Morning Update for Father's Day weekend.
Washington's Mall, WMAL, where Washington comes to talk.
In the news at 6:30, the White House is making clear that President Biden is opposed to letting the federal gasoline tax rise at the rate of inflation to help pay for an infrastructure package. A bipartisan group of 21 senators is trying to craft that package. The gas tax increase, part of an early package that called for $579 billion in new spending on roads, bridges, rail, and public transit. Georgia's Secretary of State is publishing a list of nearly 102,000 voters who will be removed from the rolls unless they act to preserve their registration. Republican Brad Raffensperger announcing yesterday. He says he seeks to remove voters who died or moved away. His office says removals include about 67,000 voters who changed addresses and about 34,000 voters who had election mail returned. Georgia has about 7.8 million voters. A federal judge has ruled for Florida in a lawsuit challenging the U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, the order making it difficult for cruise ships to sail due to the coronavirus pandemic. U.S. District Judge Stephen Meriday wrote in a 124-page decision on Friday that Florida would be harmed if the CDC order effectively blocking most cruises were to continue. The Tampa-based judge granting a preliminary injunction that prevents the CDC from enforcing the order, pending further legal action on a broader Florida lawsuit. Meriday authoring both sides to return to mediation to attempt to work out a full solution. It's 6:32. This is the Saturday Morning Update on WMAL. Al BD is in the WMAL Traffic Center.
On the Maryland side of the Beltway, from Prince George's County through Montgomery County, you're not going to tap the brakes on the inner loop or on the outer loop. between the two beltways in PG County on the BW Parkway and on 95. Northbound lanes are at the posted speed limit. Same thing on the southbound side. On Route 50 in Prince George's County, between the Beltway and the Bay Bridge. Right now, no delays eastbound or westbound. And at the Bay Bridge, you have two lanes headed east and three lanes coming west. And on 270 in Montgomery County, it's all clear northbound and southbound between the Beltway and Frederick. And now from GarageDoorRepair.com, the WMAL Stormwatch 7 forecast.
Partly cloudy, warm, and muggy today. We're expecting high temperatures back in the upper 80s under partly cloudy skies. We'll also have the possibility for some afternoon showers and storms. Some of them may be strong to severe, damaging winds, the primary threat. Later on tonight, some isolated storms possible, lows back around 70 degrees. For your Father's Day, partly cloudy skies. Again, the chance for some isolated afternoon storms. Keep the Stormwatch 7 app handy. Otherwise, hot and humid, highs around 90 degrees. I'm 7 News meteorologist Alex Liggett in the Stormwatch 7 Weather Center.
73 degrees in the nation's capital, 633 on the Saturday morning update on WMAL.
It's great to be back in the DMV. The Dan Bongino Show, weekdays from noon to 3 on 105.9 FM, WMAL.
It is the Saturday morning update. It's a holiday weekend, and we got Father's Day. We're celebrating the first weekend of summer, Juneteenth, and we're joined by Jennifer Harper. She writes Inside the Beltway at the Washington Times. Good morning.
Well, good morning and happy holidays on all three of those events. And one thing I'll throw in there really quickly, Rick, is that our friends over at the National Retail Federation say that Americans are expected to spend $20.1 billion on fathers or those who are like fathers to them this weekend. So there you go.
Well, let's talk about the next holiday, the 4th of July, and people are lining up their ways they're going to celebrate. And we got a governor who's in a little bit of a spat over the 4th.
Well, yes, indeed. There's always some drama associated with July 4th somewhere. And this year, we'll have to remember that a year ago, Donald Trump, then president, he was standing before Mount Rushmore. Remember that in the fabulous Black Hills of South Dakota? And he was celebrating Independence Day with 7,500 people, gave a stirring speech, so forth and so on. And what he said that day was, every American patriot should be filled with joy because each of you lives in the most magnificent country in the history of the world. Well, the South Dakota governor, that's Kristi Noem, she wanted to also have a celebration this year. Well, guess what? The National Park Service turned down a formal request from the state of South Dakota to repeat these patriotic festivities this year. And they said that it was going to, the pyrotechnics would possibly damage the site itself, that there was opposition from some folks living in the area, health risk from COVID, so far, so on, et cetera. And so South Dakota Governor Kristi Noem, she actually sued the Federal Parks Agency in April to try to get permission here. And their lawsuit said, despite the Biden administration's arbitrary and unlawful decision, we will continue fighting to once again return fireworks to Mount Rushmore. And her permit was still denied on June the 2nd. So anyway, they're still looking into this, trying to get back to South Dakota and all the patriotic glories they're in. So anyway, Governor Noem, she reviewed what President Biden told everybody, which was to please celebrate and have fun this year. And the governor said this applies everywhere but South Dakota, perhaps. And she says, I can't believe they're still denying us the opportunity to have our own celebration when they're basically directing all states, communities, and tribes to hold celebrations with pomp and circumstances. That's what Governor Noem told Fox News. The fact that they're not letting South Dakota have our fireworks at Mount Rushmore is just plain political.
Well, on Friday afternoon, the stock market was taking a dive. Are people starting to get a little bit nervous about the spending spree that the Biden administration is about to embark upon?
Yeah, if you're feeling a little nervous about the Biden spending spree, you're definitely not alone because, you know, he's already envisioned spending trillions of dollars to, quote, shore up the economy and other things like that. And not everybody is convinced, Rick, that this plan is very valid. And this is coming from a Monmouth University poll released on Wednesday this week, and it's an academic poll, and they say a central economic criticism of Biden's plans is that the spending will lead to spiraling inflation. Most Americans express some level of concern that these plans could lead to inflation, including nearly half, 47%, who are very concerned and 24% who are somewhat concerned. You do the math on that, and that's about 7 out of 10 Americans are concerned about these plans. And the poll goes on to say those who are at least somewhat concerned about prices rising to the spending include majorities of Republicans, 93%, independents, 70%, and even Democrats, 55%. And they're also not very enthusiastic about the future effects of these spending plans. And this is what the analysis said. About 1 in 5 Americans say middle-class families have benefited from Biden's policies a lot. And another 32 say they have benefited only a little, while 36% say the middle class have not benefited at all. These results are less positive than when Biden first took office. So a little shaky ground there on all those trillions in the future, Rick.
Well, if Virginians are nervous about the administration spending, they could send a message in the upcoming gubernatorial race. And that one's heating up. Tell us a little bit about the candidates and what's next.
Well, yes, it is heating up there. And let's talk about the Democratic hopeful here, and that's Terry McAuliffe. He currently has 46% of support among Virginia voters. And Republican challenger Glenn Youngkin is within striking distance at 42%, very close right now. This is according to JMC analysis and polling survey of 550 likely Virginia voters conducted June 9 through 10. And they say it's a statistical lead for the Democratic incumbent, but it is not a secure lead. And we talked about this earlier, that three former Virginia governors, that would be Bob McDonnell, George Allen, and Jim Gilmore, all stepped forward and declared their allegiance to Mr. Youngkin. And now a bunch of other governors have joined the cause to try to help out the Republican candidate. And they are Governors Greg Abbott of Texas, Larry Hogan of Maryland, Doug Burgum of North Dakota, Bill Lee of Tennessee, and former South Carolina Governor Nikki Haley. They've all issued statements that enthusiastically endorse Mr. Youngkin. They say he will make an outstanding governor of Virginia. This is according to Governor Abbott. He says, I'm proud to support his candidacy. Glenn understands the challenges and opportunities facing Virginia that require innovative and fresh solutions, not the tired rehash of politics as usual. So interesting news there in a Virginia race.
While we're on politics, Ronna McDaniel is the chairman of the Republican National Committee, and she always enjoys getting into it with the media.
Yes, she does. She's always good in her interviews. But anyway, she's pushing back in her own way. And just this week, Ronna McDaniel has launched a new podcast titled Real America. And she says it is focused on authentic conservative policy, heartland audiences, and GOP commentary, which she says is often overlooked or ignored by the news media. And according to her introduction, she says, America is an amazing place filled with wonderful people who do incredible things. But too often, the media and liberal politicians ignore big parts of our nation and the people who make it work, she says. And the name of her podcast, again, is Real America. And we talked about Kristi Noem just a few minutes ago, and she was the first to appear on the podcast, Texas Governor Greg Abbott, and former CIA Director and Secretary of State Mike Pompeo are also going to follow as guests. If you're curious about this new podcast, you can find it at Apple or Spotify and Amazon Music, or if you want to, go to GOP.com/podcast for more information. Again, that's Ronna McDaniel. And she's always good to listen to.
The border's a hot topic, but the mainstream media types and your CNNs and your MSNBCs would rather look the other way. The Heritage Foundation is not looking the other way, though.
No, they certainly are not. And they're the first to tell you how complicated it is down there. And it's difficult to understand which end is up at times. And the Heritage Foundation, and they're very good as a resource for stuff you might want to know about. They have launched a new website that is highlighting, they say, the various consequences and failures of the Biden administration's border crisis. And they're providing commentary, links to events, reports, and so forth. And according to Mike Howell, he's the Heritage Senior Advisor, he says, enforcing our immigration laws is essential to protecting the American people and preserving our nation's sovereignty, security, and well-being. Unfortunately, since day one, the Biden administration has done exactly the opposite. This administration has unleashed a historic border crisis, and it has done so by design. Ooh, that kind of scares me a little bit. But anyway, he also adds that the border security built by the Trump administration has been swiftly torn down by the Biden administration. And, gosh, there's a lot of evidence of that. If you'd like to visit, this new site is simply called thebidenbordercrisis.com. That is, again, thebidenbordercrisis.com. Got a lot of interesting stuff, and it's there 24 hours a day.
You know, we've seen the crazy auction results recently from the non-fungible tokens. That's new, but rock and roll never dies, does it?
No, it doesn't. And, you know, you talk about auctions. There was a major auction of the property of rock and roll icons, and that automatically drew my attention. Had to see what that was. And this took place at Julian's Auction. This is a really great auction house way out in Los Angeles. They always have incredible auctions of showbiz items and so forth. And this week, it was the personal belongings of rock and roll icons. And this is 1,000 different belongings that they had assembled. And I just have a couple of prices here for some of the select items that they shared with here at Inside the Beltway. And here they are. Kurt Cobain, he did a self-portrait of himself on the road with a marker, and that went for $281,250. Alex Van Halen's Ludwig drum set went for $230,000. Elton John's high-gloss red Yamaha baby grand piano with matching bench, that went for $150,000. Cher's black jersey bodysuit with matching black motorcycle jacket went for $115,000. And an original brick from Studio Number 2 at the iconic Abbey Road Studios in London, used for a recording by the Beatles, a single brick went for $16,000. So you can always be amused at some of these at Julian's Auctions. I believe the website is Julian's Auctions. com, but always good to peek in at that.
Jennifer Harper, as always, thank you very much. Enjoy the holiday weekend. Jennifer Harper, Inside the Beltway at the Washington Times. Follow her on Twitter at Harper Bulletin.
Thanks a lot. Everybody have a good weekend.
6:47 on the Saturday morning update on WMAL. We'll talk with Jim Trusty next, our legal expert. But first, Al BD is in the WMAL Traffic Center.
Here's your latest traffic update I have for you. On the Virginia side of the Beltway, I'm looking in the cameras, and I am not seeing any construction or any accidents. You will be at the posted speed limit, both on the inner loop and on the outer loop. On 66 in Fairfax County, heads up, on the eastbound side, traffic is jammed up in Vienna between the Vienna Metro Station, exit 62 and Nutley Street. On 95 in Virginia, between the Beltway and Fredericksburg, on the northbound side, all lanes are clear. And on the southbound side, there isn't any construction or any accidents to slow you down. And now from GarageDoorRepair.com, the WMAL Stormwatch 7 forecast.
Partly cloudy, warm, and muggy today. We're expecting high temperatures back in the upper 80s under partly cloudy skies. We'll also have the possibility for some afternoon showers and storms. Some of them may be strong to severe, damaging winds, the primary threat. Later on tonight, some isolated storms possible, lows back around 70 degrees. For your Father's Day, partly cloudy skies. Again, the chance for some isolated afternoon storms. Keep the Stormwatch 7 app handy, otherwise hot and humid, highs around 90 degrees. I'm 7 News meteorologist Alex Liggett in the Stormwatch 7 Weather Center.
73 degrees in the nation's capital on the Saturday morning update on WMAL 648.
Washington's Mall, WMAL, where Washington comes to talk.
It's the Saturday morning update on WMAL. It is Father's Day weekend and also the summer solstice and Juneteenth. We're joined each week by Jim Trusty. He is a partner at IFRA Law here in Washington, is the former head of the organized crime and gang section at the U.S. Department of Justice. Happy Father's Day, Jim, and you are joining us from Paris today. Thank you.
Thank you. I mean, bonsoir. Yes, but thank you. And you've now heard my full French vocabulary, but I'll be coming home soon enough.
Yeah, just remember trop cher. That'll help. Wanted to ask you about the Portland Police Department, their unit that deals with crowd control. The entire unit, 50 officers, resigns from the assignment en masse a day after a fellow officer was indicted on an assault charge. It stems from an alleged illegal use of force. during a protest last year. What happened here that really irked that unit?
Right. Well, look, I think it's a comparative exercise. You know, you have to think what Portland may have faded from the headlines, but it's still a nightmare for law enforcement. There's riots all the time. You can call them what you want. You can say they're mostly peaceful, but they're not. And there's been violence directed at federal agents and police officers for months. And I think we've talked about this a couple of times on the show, Rick, where you know, the political leadership has tilted the scales in favor of the rioters, even though there's been literally arsons designed to kill agents in a courthouse. Somehow it's the police that deserve the extra scrutiny from law enforcement. And so I don't know whether the minor assault, it's a misdemeanor fourth degree assault, I don't know whether it's factually justified or not. You know, I wasn't there and I haven't looked at body cam footage or heard from witnesses or any of that. But I think it's a critical mass. I think that the crowd control unit has basically said, you haven't supported us from the get-go, and there's good reason for them to say that. We're besieged in this community. I mean, they naturally tend to rally as kind of a thin blue line mentality when officers are in trouble. But when they look at what's happening around them with the rioters, with the protesters, they think there's an unfair political standard being employed, and they walked off. Now, they haven't left the job of being police officers, but they said, we've had enough of the crowd control, and they've created a pretty big problem for the Portland city management.
Well, it brings up a broader issue that I'm sure you've seen and had feelings about, and that is the whole politicization of these prosecutions against police officers. I mean, how much of it is really protecting the law versus protecting the political positioning of a DA who wants to move up the ladder or a state attorney general that wants to run for governor?
Right. I mean, the political posturing in this situation when your city is burning is pretty outrageous. I mean, maybe I'm being cranky pro-law enforcement, but you know, you think if you're a small business owner in Portland, if you work at the federal courthouse in Portland, if you're a police officer, and you're listening to politicians talk about how, you know, this is a First Amendment right for these protesters and letting them set up, you know, autonomous zones and letting them know that they can go out and shoot fireworks and do things towards police and agents, you know, that by itself is a problem. But the other thing that's happened, the politics of this that I think is just, you know, devastating and explains where these officers are. Last I checked, and it's been a little while, but there had been about 900 people charged with either arsons, assaults, whatever, you know, anything to do with the rioting. Of those 900 people, we were at a point not too long ago where 550 had either had their cases dismissed or they were set for dismissal. So that's a very clear message just in terms of how they're being treated, that the DA was essentially rewarding or condoning riotous behavior at the expense of the officers. And worse, the same district attorney that made kind of a mealy-mouthed statement about, you know, well, this officer has been indicted, they have a tough job, but they have to be held accountable too, you know, kind of a moral equivalency type comment. That same district attorney is the one that not too long ago announced that any time his office was presented with a charge of assault on an officer or resisting arrest, that the case would get special scrutiny, and they would consider things such as how were the demonstrators being treated generally by the police when this happened? In other words, did they get tear gas? Because if so, maybe it's okay to swing at a police officer. So, you know, I think that the lesson has been learned the hard way by the Portland Police Department all the way up through its ex-chief, that these protesters are being given a different set of rules when it comes to breaking the law than they are, and it's hard to blame them for walking out.
Jim, headlines out of St. Louis, and many of them are very similar. Gun-waving couple pleads guilty to misdemeanors, forfeit guns. And of course, we're talking about the McCloskeys, Mark and Patricia McCloskey. They were charged after they waved guns at protesters who were outside of their home in June of 2020. And some people might say, well, they caved. Why did they cave? But from an attorney's perspective, there may be more to it.
Yeah, there is. I mean, look, I think there is a little bit of kind of silver-tongued justification going on when Mr. McCloskey announces that this is exactly what he did. It was essentially a misdemeanor assault, and he's proud to have done it, and he would do it again. I mean, he's kind of putting a little bit of a gloss on it. But you have to remember the world of exposure. I mean, if they had been convicted of felonies, well, result number one, aside from the possibility of jail time, is they're disqualified from owning any of their guns. And whatever their flaws may be as human beings, the McCloskeys certainly feel strongly about their Second Amendment rights and the desire to possess guns as they live in St. Louis. They also don't have any bar consequences. You know, if they had convictions for felonies, both of them are lawyers, by the way, then that would be a real problem for them professionally. So, you know, Mr. McCloskey in particular came off as, you know, pretty unrepentant. And maybe that's defensiveness about folding, but most attorneys would probably tell them, look, if you're getting an opportunity to plead to a misdemeanor, that's not a bad idea. And by the way, you know, a high profile, kind of sensational protest related trial in St. Louis might not be a great idea for this couple of attorneys either. So it's not an unreasonable decision by the McCloskeys to take a misdemeanor plea.
On this one, the plot thickens. Tell us about the circuit attorney for St. Louis, Kimberly Gardner.
Well, Ms. Gardner is another one of these, this handful of progressive prosecutors supported by George Soros that, that come into the system as kind of bomb throwers, saying they're going to turn everything around and undo the draconian ways of their predecessors. And as a lot of them have kind of flamed out in high-profile situations, like up in Chicago or in New York, well, Ms. Gardner started using the McCloskeys in her fundraisers. In fact, she sent out emails or letters to supporters and said, you know, I'm the one that's going to jail the McCloskeys, or words to that general effect. So she ended up getting recused from this case. You know, big opportunity for her, gets in front of it, gets kicked out of the case. And it was a special prosecutor that came in and handled the case. And I think to the special prosecutor's defense, he recognized a couple of things, such as a misdemeanor is a fair ending. And so, you know, he had the discretion to fight hard or to self-aggrandize, and he didn't do that. And again, it's a nice little case study in the differences between progressive, sensational, headline-seeking prosecutors and those that actually go in and do the job right.
The difference between progressives and professionals.
That's exactly it.
Jim Trustee joining us from Paris, France this morning. Jim, thank you, and mark your calendar. Bastille Day is coming up on July 14th.
Hopefully I'll be back. But anyway, thanks. I'll see you soon.
All right. 6:57, Saturday morning update on WMAL. We're going to be talking with John Gizzi about the big summit between Vladimir Putin and Joe Biden. That's coming up right after the 7 o'clock news. We're also going to talk with Lieutenant Colonel Tony Schaefer, and KT McFarland will give us her read on the Biden European trip. So stay with us.
WMAL-FM, Woodbridge, Washington. America's reopening. Hear it here. 105.9 FM, WMAL. A Cumulus station.